This is the Chorus Call operator. We are now beginning the question and answer session. The first question from the conference call comes from Roberto Mappelli of Equita. Yes, my first question concerns Venezuela. If you can give us an update on the currency rate that you use for Bolivar for Venezuela, and what would be the effective if the accounts in Bolivar were down to zero, given the situation in the country, starting from the receivables in euro, which are obviously that part is in a strong currency. The second question concerns the margins. You expected a margin excess of 8% in the future, so I was trying to understand if you can give us an idea of the revenue booked by Moltiply in 2015, and then can you give us an update on capital employed in concessions in the 9 months? You'd given us a snapshot of equity and semi-equity, so can you give us the same for this year? Yes. So there are many questions, so we will take note of them. Venezuela, well, we have provided for in the financial charges. We have 16 million added to the 36 of the previous fiscal year, and with this principle, they are entirely matched substantially. Calculations are obviously evolved, but after that date, there have been no variations, so the effect of the Bolivar has been basically brought down to zero. The exchange rate is the one recognized too. That's the recognized one, but you will find over 15 million that have been accrued under the liabilities so that we can perfectly match. So there's no risk in case of the devaluation of the Bolivar. Now, with regard to credit, we've written this. You'll find this anywhere in the balance sheet. We declared this. It's 267 million euro. This is strong currency, of course. We are now working, not physically, but we're trying to collect this item because, as you know, this is a project protected by an intergovernmental agreement rather than an interministerial one, and there's the concrete interest of our government to collect this sum. So we're not working. We're just doing maintenance of the works because contractually we can't abandon the works. So that is why there are some slight fluctuations in the receivables, which are only in strong currency. So I think I have replied to the questions regarding Venezuela. Now, let's move on to future margins. I gave you a general indication that will concern the presentation of the business plan that will be presented in the future. But if you take a look at our order backlog and you break it down, because even in this presentation, you can find you have the opportunity of doing this, and you can see the contracts making it up at the 29 billion. So let's set aside the concessions. We have the other part, which is just below 18 million. So if, as I said, if you assume an operating result of about 8%, so we're not far from what we've been able to do. If you take a look at the last fiscal years, and you also find this here with the ups and downs of results, some results which are more positive in terms of operating results. With regard to the contracts in the vertical, there's a margin that we always talked about, a range between 8.5% and 9%. Then there was a period in which we had very profitable contracts, not only the Turkish ones, but also the Russian ones, which reached a fairly advanced execution phase, and they produced their margin. But there were also other contracts that did better than expected, and that is why we have this margin. So the second quarter of this fiscal year, you will find margins that are higher because with some bonuses for speeding up work, and obviously we enter these only when we have collected them. So the line 2 in Warsaw, the underground line 2, for example, in Warsaw. So this may have been a bit misleading for analysts, or may have encouraged them to make over-optimistic assessments, because obviously the lifespan of contracts consists of various phases, some are more productive, some less. We've always said that the marginal contracts will never exceed the 9%, because there are some considerations, there are some production phases that are less profitable than others. Obviously, every time a positive result is published, the assessment is always made in a very positive manner, but the group has an enviable economic soundness, and it has some very positive contracts, very good contracts, and I'd like to say that commercially there will be a strong increase in activities in the coming months from a commercial viewpoint, so that will help us to further strengthen what I'm talking about right now. So in a conservative way, I'm saying about 8%, because obviously the structure of the group is changing, the group is becoming bigger and bigger, of course, and we've had a problem with Canada, which we have overcome. So in terms of profitability, we're solving it in overall terms. So I don't see what the doubts might be, given also the performance, because the future is always better. Looking back, the performance is amazing, but I really can't see what the risks are. Now, in terms of production and the production-related revenue with regard to Canada, as you know, in Canada we have several things, and I'm just referring to the hydroelectric park there, the Muskrat Falls part. We had €320 million in terms of production in 2015, which we brought to a zero margin. And then, well, we have more questions. Equity and semi-equity. The €781 million, namely gross investments in our concessions, can be broken down, are divided into equity, €450 million, semi-equity, €240 million, and the rest are other items relating to financial receivables of the minimum guarantee and so on. So I've given you the two figures together, €700 million. And obviously you can ask for the details of the investor relations. Yes, that's fine. I wanted to go back to the margins, because if you've achieved 8% with €120 million, so the part that does not concern loss work for, well, obviously, is about 9%. So if you're thinking about 8%, that will mean that there's some deterioration with the arrival of new contracts. Is that correct? No, it's quite the opposite. Since we haven't brought the margin, it's quite the opposite. If today, so the part related to Muskrat Falls, now I said that in the course of the fiscal year, the part of Muskrat Falls, well, if I calculate a margin of 8.78% on these €320 million, I think you know how to do multiplications. How much is that? €25 million. Once we've solved that, it's a one-shot thing, as I say. It's not something that's going to be repeated. So we expect to solve the problem. The margin, the estimate, the prudential estimate of the margin is €17.8 million in terms of order backlog. It's about 8%. To be prudent, I've already been prudent. When I say I'm talking about the corporation, of course. So I think you just have to turn it the other way around. Thank you. Next question from Andrea Balloni of Fidentiis. Yes, good afternoon to everyone. I have three questions, one on Muscat Falls, two on Muscat Falls, one on the one with regard to Muscat Falls. The first one is the following. I was wondering, why did you decide in the fourth quarter to lower the contract margin and to bring the margin down to zero of the first quarter? So what has changed compared to the previous 9 months when the problems seem to be more or less solved? The second question regarding Muscat Falls, I wanted to understand if you could give us some information, some more detailed information in euros of the impact of bringing the margin down to zero and last year and this year. And the third question is a bit more complicated, concerns Venezuela. I saw that assessment of 16 million euros. I didn't exactly understand what that's referred to. In the press release, you refer to a general issue, a general problem in Venezuela, an absence of coverage in the budget. And then you said that you brought down the value of receivables in local country down to zero. So if you have found a country-related risk, given the lack of coverage in the budget, why did you to write off the currency, the local currency receivables, and not the one the receivables in euros? That's all. Well, again, I'll start off from the end, from Venezuela, perhaps, and then I'll work my way back. Now, regarding Venezuela, last year we did a provision for 36 million to neutralize the effect of the Bolivar. We did the assessment for the entire lifespan of the contract, the completion of was 16 million. That was the provision. So what did we do? We reduced the item in bolivars entirely without touching the exchange rate, for to be cautious from a fiscal point of view, from a tax related point of view, and the result is the same. I bring the effect of the bolivars down to zero. So what I done, when I say I mean the company, of course, is the assessment of the risk. So it's clear that today we are not in a situation, or rather, we're in a situation where the exchange rate has fluctuated because the current exchange rate is much lower, actually, substantially lower. There's no clear and final position regarding the exchange rate that needs to be used, so we prefer to use income statement and balance sheet mechanisms in order to include this. But the result is absolutely the same. We didn't touch the part in euros because these are receivables there in a strong currency with from a state that is not in default, and Venezuela paid in 2015 and is about to pay in extra parts and extras. So we have political contacts to solve the problem politically. We are expecting payments in bolivars very shortly with a weak currency, essentially. So we haven't touched this because creditworthiness hasn't been touched, and we have all the instruments that we've shown time and again, because we've been operating in Venezuela for almost 40 years. Essentially, we've always recovered the values that we've written in our income statement in a very prudential and cautious way. So I think I've answered the question. Just a follow-up regarding Venezuela. We're talking about an exchange rate risk rather than a country-related risk, so based on what you said. I was wondering that, besides the receivables, isn't there any risk relating to other currency-related items? I'm thinking about the past when you collected part of your receivables. I'm sorry. This is the balancing between assets and liabilities. This is the currency, the exchange rate. So we've neutralized the exchange rate risk. Is that entirely? Thank you. Let's go on with the next questions. Now, with regard to Canada, so the provisions and the margins being so nice very progressively, as I said, it's not that we fell on the fourth quarter, nothing has changed. The level of confidence has changed. Level of confidence about the outcome of negotiations underway, yes, yes. But in the course of the quarters, we have always made a provision for the part relating to in the second semester, despite, sorry, the performance of the second quarter was very significant. If you take the income statement, the quarterly ones, you will find that the profitability of the second Q was particularly high, and I said I justified this. So despite the fact that we've made provisions for Canada, there were two contracts that were closed, line two of the Warsaw Underground, and the other one was another Italian contract which were awarded bonuses for speeding up the works, and so that helped offset the apparent reduction in profitability. When I said that the level of confidence in Canada changed, I meant that what we do normally, I'm not saying that this happens all the time, but with regard to contracts, when we assess provisions and the state of work progress, it's an ongoing process. And in this case, we opened negotiations because there was a drop in productivity and a labor cost, which is an important element in that contract, and therefore we faced it and solved the problem. So the gradual provisions made were carried out over the quarters. I don't look at the quarters. I take a look at the overall assessment of the contracts over the entire lifespan and the operation, you know, to work on a quarterly basis, you know, given the complexity of our corporation, it doesn't really make much sense. I think I've answered all your questions. Otherwise, I'm open to receive other questions. Yes. Just a quick follow-up on Canada. So in the 9 months, even in the 9 months, the margin of Canada was substantially down to zero. Can you repeat the question? I didn't understand it. I just wanted to be sure that I understood you correctly. Can you confirm that in with regard to the results of the 9 months, the margin of the Canada contract was essentially down to zero? Well, this is something that you can check with my colleagues. What I can tell you that over the previous quarters, we considered a neutralization of margins for Canada, and I'm sure that you can get the calculations for each quarter, but this is the basic idea. One last thing. What was the margin for Canada last year? 10 million, I think, progressively. But then, please, if you can be so kind as to contact the investor relations department, because I can't remember all the margins of all the investments, I apologize. Thank you. Next question from Alessandro Tauro of Mediobanca. Yes, hello, good afternoon. I have four questions, if I may. The first is a follow-up on this Canadian project. You talked about negotiations underway with the customer. I wanted to understand whether the company was confident about reaching an agreement within the year, basically bearing in mind that, you know, if you've neutralized or sterilized the margin, it means that there's a gap between your budget and the actual margin that you have. So that's my first question. The second question is about strategy. I read in your press release that in the short term, there will be a greater focus on EPC contracts. I wanted to have more details regarding this change in strategy now with regard to disposal. You mentioned that a geopolitical issue has created some delays in this disposal program, but you didn't mention the SPV, I think you said that you have to collect various concessions. Is that something in place, or are you working on an individual asset basis, I think? Oh, sorry, I think he meant a pooling of assets for disposal. Yes. Four questions. Plus four, as they used to say. Now, regarding the Canadian contract, there are negotiations underway. We are confident, but I can't provide further details. I think I've already said too much. This is a contract where we have exceeded 40% in terms of work progress. A very complicated contract from an operational viewpoint, in terms of logistics and in terms of operation due to the climatic conditions. Last year was the worst winter in 30 years. I was landing in very critical conditions, I remember. So obviously this is a complicated contract, but yeah, that's our job. Yeah, the other things that you mentioned, negotiations are underway, and we expect that in the course of the fiscal year, in the short term, it will reach its completion. A greater focus on EPC. Yeah, I'm not sure where did you get this change of strategy from your press release? I read that you were focusing more on EPC contracts rather than the project financing projects or PPP contracts. No. If you read slide 2 and 3, you'll understand the effect of what we're talking about. The fact that EPC contracts are with private customers and EPC project finance have increased and accounts for 53%. So that's the focus, yes. And the press release from a sectoral point of view, commercial efforts will focus on the acquisition of EPC contracts. And we are confirming a careful and thorough assessment. So, yes, this means that EPC contracts, which are part of concessions and not concessions, increased to 53% from 4% back in 2006. So there's no change from a strategic viewpoint. There's the will to consolidate this model, which can lead to the creation of other profitability models. Obviously, the effort has been a significant one. In the future, it will no longer be so, because a cycle has ended and the future will surely be less challenging from a financial viewpoint, even though the profitability capabilities will be the same, given the fact that we've got this model in place and it's working. Now, with regard to the fund, what I said about the geopolitical conditions, otherwise I feel that I'm a Martian. What happened in Turkey and in the Middle East, of course, well, we know. The level of appetite for assets is very significant. Now, of course, since assets are very concentrated geographically, so concentrating them in a single as a pool or a single asset, so disposing of them as in a pool manner or a single asset. So if we have to increase the assets in a single vehicle, then this obviously has an increasing risk. So we have to consider various hypotheses. So that's what we're doing. And negotiations are underway just regards now, of course, now the two assets that are more advanced, as I said, are the Italian and Chilean one. So they are not affected, by this, obviously, for this clear reason. I just wanted to explain this point, obviously. Options are open, and we are pursuing individual negotiations with specific analysis carried out by our investors for individual assets. And what I said to this regard is that bear in mind that whilst before the de-risking of pooling various assets together with that particular sort of package. Now today we have an additional asset. We're represented by the fact that the main assets have been completed. The construction phase has been completed. So the theoretical discount of that an investor makes in acquiring a project like this is diminished. Something that 6 months ago, even 3 months ago, we could foresee. Today, we have reached our goals, and so it's clear that different options are open. So when I talked about geopolitical risk, I was referring to the attacks and what happened, of course. It's not that we're on the moon, of course. It's those type of risk, that have helped us to think more thoroughly about the times. Yes, I understand. And if I may ask another question, since we've known each other for some years already, now your view is, now, regarding the Middle East side, and you were talking about possible contracts, given what is happening with regard to oil and so on. Now, the company looking at some tenders and taking part in some call for tenders, what difference did it perceive in terms of payment system and advance payments? Is something changing on the customer side in the Middle East? Well, if you take a look at the detail of revenues, we have about 50 million in revenue. Yes. Now, unfortunately, talking one or the other, yes, of course. Now, there are some concrete commercial opportunities. The prices have been under pressure, and obviously the level of investment has diminished greatly given the drop in the price of the raw material, so we have gradually reduced our exposure in these kind of projects if we consider the oil and gas market. Now, infrastructure projects that concern the Middle East are something quite different because they depend on the different states and the situation in the various states. Obviously, there are infrastructure projects. I mean, if you ask the question, you probably saw that we took part in some calls for tenders and we're waiting for the outcome. We're pretty confident, also because these are things that we know how to do very well. But oil and gas, well, we've already taken it out. It's not part of our activities. Thank you. Now, it's clear that in the different areas of the world, we evaluate risk at the macro level impact, and obviously the effect of oil is obviously clear to all. Luckily, we weren't particularly exposed to that type of market. Thank you. Thank you very much. Very clear. Next question from Matteo Bonitone of Kepler Bushel. Yes, I will have a question. Good afternoon. I have a question concerning the level of covenants at year-end, because if we calculate the debt-EBITDA ratio based on the figures that you had following the reclassification of equity income, we have a debt-equity of 1.6 and EBITDA of 1.8. So I wanted to understand how you count it, as if it's true that you added some incorrect financial receivables in this, or what are the adjustments that we can make to calculate these covenants in a significant way for you? And then I wanted to receive an update regarding investments in concessions that we can expect in 2016 and, if possible, in 2017 to include in new initiatives in concession that entered the backlog last year. Now, regarding the covenants, there are no problems. No, please don't let me ask me to go into detail, because this is really not the moment. It's something really quite complicated, because there are a number of different complexities. What I wanted to say, this is something you can check with my colleagues, because in detail they'll tell you things exactly. Now, to calculate the contractual covenants, you are not in a condition to do that from the balance sheet, because there are a number of adjustments that you need to do to consider everything and the changes that have occurred also from a contractual viewpoint. And this applies also both from economic viewpoint and also in terms of debt in the assessment. So, I'm sorry, I apologize, but you'll get the details from the investor relations department. Overall, from a contractual viewpoint, we're within contractual covenants. We were getting ready for the growth level experienced by the group, and we prepared in advance the effort. We prepared for the effort that we needed to make. Now, from the standpoint of investments in 2016, for concessions, they amount to about 100 million. That's what I can tell you. And overall, as I said, we're completing some investments. We have some new ones, the hospital in Chile, the Santiago Airport, which is little stuff but diluted over time, so we don't have a concentration in investments as we had in the past due to the development of initiatives, prevalently Turkish, Chilean, Italian, essentially. Okay, thank you. The next question. I apologize, did you want to answer? Yes, I think I've completed all the answers to the questions asked. Yes, the next question comes from Sal Casadio of M&G. Yes. Hello, Mr. Chairman. I was wondering if you could provide some further details on cash flow in particular and the performance of working capital and interest and taxes in terms of cash, just to have a better understanding of the performance of the cash flow, and if you could comment on the performance of working capital, if you think, I imagine it must be negative this year, and whether this can be recovered, if this imbalance in working capital is something that you can recover in the upcoming quarters and in the next year. Just 1 minute. Maybe I didn't understand your question correctly. You're saying that we had a negative performance of working capital. It was there was a problem regarding it. If you have cash generated by operating activities. Sorry, just hold on. I want to understand if I got your question right. If you take slide 12. Yes. You have the first 9 months on the left-hand side and the fourth quarter on the right-hand side. If you take a look at production and absorption in the course of the first 9 months, so we have grown by 11% per annum. Yeah, sorry. I was referring to the entire fiscal year. Maybe I would have specified with you, referred to the entire fiscal year. So the sum is 33 million, 218 minus 185. Well, as I see cash flow, there is EBITDA, taxes, interest, and then working capital. Here we don't have these elements. It all falls under a single item. So I want to know if you could provide a breakdown for the fiscal. Well, I can't, obviously. You can see the EBITDA. You'll find that in the balance sheet. Yes, that's the only thing I have. And the variation is something that, well, it's 33 million. Taxes, you can find. Well, you can't do this calculation with the investor relations department in detail. EBITDA is something that you can find in the balance sheet. We can do this. Yes, I have that. Absorption amounts to 33 million. That's the difference between 218 and 185. Tell me if I've got your question right. I was talking about fiscal year 2015 as a whole and EBITDA. So how do you get from 350 and EBITDA of 350 to minus 30 shown in the consolidated balance sheet with a breakdown of the main items, taxes, interest, and working capital, if it was possible to have this breakdown for 2015. Can I ask you then to kindly contact the Investor Relations Department with Alessandra? We'll provide you all the details, because to do this now seems a little, well, I run the risk of boring everybody. But however, if you go to page 11 of the press release, maybe that will help you. I was referring to that. So we don't have the doesn't contain the details I was asking for. Okay, we'll provide all the details that you wish. If you contact the Investor Relations Department, perhaps you know, doing this live might take a bit, a lot of time. So you know, I apologize. Perhaps also operationally it would be more efficient to proceed as I suggested. Yes, okay, thank you. Next question is in English from Matt Robbins of BNP Paribas.
Hi, thank you. Hopefully this question hasn't been answered. It's quite difficult to understand what's going on with the line. The phone line in English is quite bad, and the translation is very quick. But regarding your reclassification of EBITDA, do creditors, do bondholders have access to that EBITDA as cash? Is it a cash payment that goes up to the bondholder group? That's my first question. And secondly, on the old method, your Q4 EBITDA fell 33%. Can you please go into more detail about what happened there? I'm sorry, but not. We cannot hear you. We can barely hear you.
Allora, scusate. Sorry, just a second to understand. So can I try? Can you hear me?
That is better.
Better? Okay.
Yeah.
So the reclassification item is not is a non-cash item.
So this isn't cash EBITDA. So as a creditor, I shouldn't be considering it.
It's up to you. Yes, it's a non-cash.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
And the fall or the reduction of the EBITDA figure in for quarter, I answered this question during the conference call. Probably I reply now. Was due to the reduction of the margin about the Muscat Fall, the Canadian project, mainly. You know, there are a lot of items, mainly due to the Canadian item.
What was the euro number that had, you know, that was the effect from this, so I can kind of work out what the rest of the business is doing. Under old EBITDA number.
Can I ask you to answer to the investor relator in order to be very precise, in order to reply in a precise way? But it's in a range, you know, of the more or less 1% of the total revenue of the fourth quarter, no? The effect of reduction of the EBITDA figure. Okay? But you can ask directly Alessandra in order to receive the precise number.
Okay. Can I just also make a suggestion for the future? The amount of information provided in your press release and your presentation is not really sufficient to analyze things quickly enough or well enough. If you could provide a lot more information, like, for example, a proper cash flow statement, that would probably stop a lot of the questions having to be asked. Particularly when we find it hard to understand the Italian translation sometimes.
Okay, thank you for your suggestion. So we will improve and we will do. Okay.
Thank you.
The next question is from Ben Beeren, Citigroup.
Good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call. Would you be able to provide us with the outstanding balances of your off-balance sheet factoring and confirming lines as at 31 December 15 and also the previous year?
So is in the last quarter or during the year?
So what were the balances at 31 December 15? What were the balances at the previous year? And also, how much did they, I guess, did they increase in the fourth quarter?
So we will send you, so in order to, because I'm not the information available at this time, so let me ask you to get in touch with Alessandra, our investor relator. We will reply. We will send you the precise information.
Okay, I can do that. Did you increase the use of factoring in the fourth quarter?
Oh, no. No, in respect, I can tell you that if you compare the quarters with the previous year, it's in line. It's not improved.
Okay.
It's not the reason of the cash generation of the fourth quarter.
Has there been any impact on your Russian projects that you are in joint venture with your Turkish joint venture partner? Has there been any sanctions?
No. The Russian projects are not included in the sanction, baskets. So this is the reason that we had. Honestly, some delays, some difficulties at the beginning, but now solved. We are going very well at this time.
Is that the reason we have included
in the presentation the Russian project, the Ring Road of St. Petersburg. And so we are going very well, and we are in line with the timing in order to deliver the project.
And does that include the M11? Has that been unaffected, or is that because that hasn't started yet? That project has it.
So the M11 is a project that, in relation to which we had some delays during the year, you know, in the final stage of the negotiation, and so we now solved that we are starting the project with some problem, to be honest, at that time, but now solved. It's a project not included in the sanction, and so.
Okay. And
we had a lot of report by our advisors, legal advisors, and so we are very calm now because the problem were solved.
Okay, thank you.
To be honest, there was a problem in relation to the relationship between Turkish and Russian people. No?
At the beginning it was a problem, now solved.
So.
Right. Thank you. And just with the currencies moving around quite substantially, at the moment, how do you expect the declines in the major currencies that you operate in to impact the 2016 results?
So in terms of variation of our the currencies, the main variation were relating the Turkish and Russian project. We are very precise and very careful about the these projects. And so if you look the 16 figures, we will continue to monitor the situation in a very careful way, let's say, approach. So we had some problems. This was the reason. So there is a committee in charge, and day by day we review the situation.
Okay.
Please take into consideration that probably I was not so precise. Let me complete the information. So the Turkish projects are in U.S. dollars. There is no problem. So there is a fluctuation relating to the cost in Turkish lira, but the revenue are in dollars.
Yep. Just on the Turkish assets, considering they are in U.S. dollars, and I know that the concession guarantees from the Turkish government are in U.S. dollars as well.
Yeah.
In order to sell that project, considering the lira has depreciated, will you have to renegotiate that and maybe extend the tenor of the concession so that the Turkish government didn't have to actually, I guess, subsidize the income from the toll roads?
So the tariff is fixed year by year at the beginning, the second day of the year, is fixed in dollar. And so at this stage we had no problems. So please take into account that there were international financing from international banks. So there is, in our opinion, at this stage there is no problem.
Okay. All right. Thanks very much.
The next question is from the English speaker, Roland Vetter of TS Partners.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Maybe it also has been answered already because the translation is not easy to follow, but coming back to Venezuela, it's very clear that Venezuela has a risk of a sovereign default. And if there's a sovereign default, you might have to risk that you have to write down some more receivables of Venezuela. You have some bonds with a covenant, and there could be some risk that you might breach a covenant in the case of a write-down of a large amount of the receivables. Are you talking to the banks about these covenants? Are you talking about any action like covenants waiver, or would there be potentially some risk of equity issue?
Well, in my opinion, Venezuela is not in default, so it's paying the principal and the interest relating to the international debt. And we are monitoring the situation. During the conference call, I told the investors in Italian, probably the translation was not so precise, probably that we are monitoring the situation, and there is an intergovernment agreement between Italy and Venezuela. This is the reason we have not considered the opportunity to make a provision in relation to the receivable in euro. We had a complete evaluation of the assets in bolivares, and so we are negotiating for the future. So at this stage, what I can tell you that our approach is very conservative. We are not working there. We are only working at the minimum level in order to be compliant with the contract, and we are taking all the actions to monitor the situation with the political parties.
But let's put it following, you cannot rule out, in my opinion, default. And if I think Venezuela, at least the bond market, is pricing in that there could be a problem. If you get a default in Venezuela and you would have to write down these covenants, could they become a problem for you? Or would the banks be willing, for example, for a fee to waive them? Or if you would have to do something, would you consider raising equity to fix the balance sheet problem for the covenants?
In my opinion, at this stage, at this time, we have not to consider the outcome, the situation you are describing, and we are monitoring, and so we will see, but at this time, there is no problem in this sense. We are monitoring continuously the situation, but there is no problem, in my opinion, in this way.
Okay, thank you.
The next question from the conference in English, from Daniel Vaughan of J.P. Morgan.
Hello. Quick question, just on the sort of XJV EBITDA. I've tried for probably the last hour and a half to work out, and I agree, I think Matthew said a lot of the information is missing. Can you just use this public forum just to tell us what the XJV EBITDA is actually down for the fourth quarter 2015 compared with the fourth quarter 2014? Is it kind of 25-30% level? And then, so rather than just sort of contact investor relations, can you just sort of use this forum to answer the questions? Because I think everybody has the same question. And then for the fourth quarter 2015, so to that XJV EBITDA, could you say what amount of Venezuelan sort of contribution we should be adding back to that figure? So it just to try and get an idea of what the actual underlying business is doing without these accounting sort of implementations that we've had at the fourth quarter. Thank you.
Just a second to recap the situation, sorry. If I understand, you're asking so the normalized let's say EBITDA margin, no?
No. So the XJV EBITDA for the fourth quarter of 2015.
Yes, it's in the range of €60 million.
Okay, would sort of 55 be correct, or 60? You're saying
60.
Okay, is that with the Venezuelan addbacks as well, or?
Or no, is it a Canadian? It's not an effect from Venezuela, but from Canada.
Okay, so that 60 million, should for the fourth quarter 2014, would a comparable figure be sort of €85 million?
Is it yes, is in a range of €85 million.
Right, okay, that's what I wanted to say.
It was.
Okay, that's good enough for me. Thank you very much.
Okay.
The next question from the conference room from Julian Russell Powers, HSBC.
Yeah, I've got two questions. One on working capital. What are the main components of the 153 working capital inflows in Q4? And as well, is it possible to give a guidance for working capital for 2016, please?
Just a second. Italy, so the improvement in the cash flow figures of the fourth quarter were from Italy, Algeria, Poland.
Okay.
Mainly. So, yeah. So you can ask the investor relator if you want directly.
Yeah, yes. And for 2016, guidance?
what I can, I don't know, because I have to be in a position of mago wizard of the fourth quarter. So for the guideline for 16, so we are, if you see, so we had a conservative approach over the years, and so what I can tell you that we will work in order to maintain under control the working capital figures. So what I can tell you, my forecast for the fourth quarter 16 will be the world of 16 will be to maintain under control the working capital figures, and we will work to reduce the impact on the balance sheet. So, but let me, there will be a presentation of the business plan you will see in a short term.
Okay, that's good. And I've got one question, a follow-up on the contract regarding the breach in Turkey about the aging of the guaranteed dollar amount. Is it this has this exchange rate been set up for the life of the project, or is it reset every year at the beginning of the year? Because from the comments you made, I was under the impression that you reset this exchange rate between dollar and Turkish lira every year at the beginning of Jan.
Just a second. Strategy, the currency strategy for the Turkish project in dollars will be improved year by year, because I have a risk of, let's say, fluctuation of the currency, because from the beginning, during year by year, not for the whole project. You will be able to cover the risk year by year, because the second day of the of each year, you will have the fixed rate in comparison with the Turkish lira. So at that time, we will fix the strategy of the year.
Okay, that's clear. Thanks very much. Thanks.
The next question from the conference in English, from Alex Rumber Greenhill of Société Générale.
Hi, hello. Sorry if this got answered earlier on the call. Could you just clarify the add-backs to EBITDA? Are they solely added back to adjusted EBITDA as income from the JVs, or are there other consolidations in the income statement or the balance sheet on the revenues or the debt lines, for example?
Please, can you repeat, because we were not able to follow.
Sorry, of course. The add-backs that you have to EBITDA, are they purely add-backs to adjusted EBITDA, or are there other consolidations within the income statement or the balance sheet? So are you adding back any revenues from JVs, or are you including any debt from JVs?
If I understand, we had no change in terms of area of consolidation. So it was just a reclassification from the financial item to the EBITDA figures, with the same consolidation area.
So it just comes above the line from below the line before.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
The next question from the conference in English, from Yashad of Credit Suisse.
Hi there. Thanks for taking the question. Two questions, actually, just on this EBITDA number that I'm a little bit confused about. So, I mean, you confirmed earlier that the 4Q on 4Q was down from 85 to 60. If we were to add back the Muskrat Falls deficit, which you gave to 0% margin this year, what would that decline look like? And I guess following on from that, I mean, because we don't have access to your full cash flow statement as yet, it's very difficult to work out what the actual cash EBITDA was for 4Q on 4Q. Would it be possible just to give an idea of that? And the second question I had was regarding the disposal of A4. I mean, the exclusivity period with Abertis runs out towards the end of the month. Are you able to give us any color on exactly what is delaying the announcement of that deal being complete, and could you remind me what proceeds that you would expect to receive on completion? Thank you.
Just a second. I prefer to start with the A4 answer. So the negotiation with Abet is going ahead, but you know the timing of the exclusivity period is at the end of March, and so we are going ahead. You know that the book value of our investment is in a range of 120 million euro, and because we have 15.3% of the total, 14.3% of the assets. So that's all. So we are going ahead. We had positive outcome from the local negotiation about the investment called Valdastico Nord, you know, the authorization. So the concession period will expire in 2026, and that's all. So what I can tell you at this stage is this, because day by day there is a step ahead of the negotiation with the Spanish guys, and so, but we are confident about the positive outcome of the negotiation. So the first question, please, can you get in touch with the investor relator, because we were not able to hear for the relevant part of the your question. If I can ask you to get in touch with Alessandra, and we will reply very shortly. You know, you can send an email, please.
Okay, and sorry, just one follow-up question. I mean, in terms of the wider valorization process, you've seen obviously there's been some movement in sort of thinking about sort of Turkish government bond yield spreads. Do you maintain the valuation that you were guiding towards last year, I think at 2Q?
But you know, the investment are at cost, huh? Not a fair value in our assets. So we didn't make an evaluation. So we made an evaluation of the average margins coming from the two different phases, construction and concession. We had not significant variation of the assets. But the investment are at cost.
Okay.
Our book value is at cost, okay? Thank you.
Okay. I would just echo some of the comments from the previous callers that were suggesting that perhaps the presentation could include a little bit more information just to help us digest some of the information. It would be really appreciated. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
The next question from the Corporate in Italia comes from Giuseppe Mazzola of Exane. Yes, you have the floor. Yes, good afternoon. Two questions. I'd like to know the breakdown of the net debt at the end of 2015 between concessions and constructions. And the second, if you can confirm that the new business plan in April will be presented by the new CEO. Thank you. I'll start off from the second question. Surely, yes. The breakdown of the debt. Can you just give me a second? I'm just trying to recoup the data in order to be accurate. So, net debt, 538 concessions, and 200, I didn't catch the number, in construction. Jorge Lazaro, Blue Bay Assessment Manager.
Just a second.
Can you ask your question in Italian, please? Yes, my question concerns debt. So if you remove the add-backs to EBITDA, so it's 54 million. So the net leverage is 85. So mathematically speaking, from the information that we've given, I'm sorry, I can hardly hear me. There is a risk of covenant breach. No, it's not so, because as I said, there are various items that rectify the calculation from the balance sheet. I don't think you can calculate this. Please contact the investor relations office. We are not in breach, absolutely. So we're absolutely confident about this. Thank you. The next question from Aureli Bastianella of Kairos. Yes, good afternoon. I have three questions, starting from slide 12. I wasn't able to reconcile the CAPEX shown in the slide with what is written below. So I wanted to understand whether the difference is due to the quasi-equity that you have included in the concessions and how this is classified in your net debt. The second question concerns A4. I was reading a few days ago in the local press that the Baldassico Nord project has been abandoned. There is an alternative route that would not make it a motorway, and there was talk about the fact that given the regulation of in-house concessions, that there was the possibility to automatically extend the expiration of concessions if the partners are public parties. And I was reading about this sort of conglomerate for the motorways of the northeastern part of the country. So I just wanted to get your comments to this regard. Thank you. Yes. 1 minute, I'm just recopying the data. So page 12. So 90 plus 42, 90 equities and 42 sub-equities. So that gets versus 200. So semi-equity become financial receivables that diminish the net financial position. Semi-equity, yes. Yes. But I know what you're trying to get. The covenant in the comments is not taken into account. So they have to be added back to the net financial position, yes. So essentially, if I say that your net financial position at year end is 1 billion, in actually readjusting it, considering the financial receivables that you have included, it would be 1.3. A bit less. Okay. But why this? Well, to this regard, since the question that we all have concerns reconciling the cash flow and calculating the covenants, maybe you have a distribution list. I mean, if you create two slides where you can clarify these two elements, how do you calculate the covenants and reconciling the cash flow for 2015, I mean, that would be very useful. Yes, I will accept your suggestion. Thank you. We'll do that. There was a question about A4. Yes. Now, we don't follow the sale procedure following the press, but we're just seeing how things go. So a lot of things were published in the press regarding the extension of the concession, the A4 concession. What I can say is that we think that the concession will expire in 2026 from an administrative viewpoint. There are various acts that prove this. Progress has been made regarding the agreement between the local partners, the Veneto region, and the province, the autonomous province of Trento and Bolzano. And so concrete progress has been made. Now, of course, there are some alternative projects that it can be a little different in terms of the road, but what I can certify is that there is a political agreement, and so this will lead to a decision that will be taken by the CIPE body, and that's it. And since we're commenting the press, the news in the press, let's comment the piece of news whereby the purchaser with whom we're negotiating has received funding of $600 billion, which is the value, the 51% value of the asset. Thank you. The next question from Alessio Bisin of Alessine. You have the floor. Yes, I have a question concerning financial charges. I remember that there'd be a provision for the bond that was convertible. You had made out a provision for $40 billion. Now, given the trend of the shares on the stock exchange, you've had provided for a release of these $40 billion, or if you've kept them in. 1 minute. I'm just checking the results. I'm sorry, I could hardly hear the gentleman. I'm looking at the data. So last year it was zero. This year it's $2.2 million. Obviously, with the fluctuation in the share price, the financial charges in the income statement has diminished, of course, the appraisal of the option. Next question is a follow-up from Sal Kazadi of MNG. Yes, hello. I wanted to just receive a clarification regarding a detail that you provided earlier in the call where you wrote down the debt, end-of-year debt between the part relating to the construction business debt and the one tied more to project financing. Can you confirm the figure? 538 is the project financing debt, and 450 in net terms is the construction business debt. Can you just clarify this point? Because it wasn't clear. Can I just interrupt you? I said something different of the $988 million of net financial position, including own shares. I said that $538 million are corporate debt used to finance concession investments or recourse and constructions, $450 million. There is no recourse debt in okay. It's all recourse debt. Yes, it's all recourse debt because this has been our mode of finance. Yes. Okay, I just wanted to clarify because it wasn't clear to me. Okay. Mr. Cherry, we have no further questions yet. Okay, fine. I apologize. Somebody, Giuseppe Marcella, has just asked for a follow-up. Yes. Mr. Cherry, I apologize. Just to avoid double counting, you're talking about an invested capital in concessions amounting $718 million, which would include semi-equity, $274 million, I seem to understand. $244 million, okay. So the actual invested capital is $600 million, more or less. Okay. Mr. Cherry, we have finished with the questions. Okay. Fine. I say goodbye to everybody, and I hope to hear from you soon. Thank you.